Hey everyone, you're tuning in once again to Deeper Grooves, Musicians on Music, hosted by Cliff Beach and sponsored by California Soul Music Record Label. I am so excited and stoked today to talk to legendary artist Claude McKnight, brother of Brian McKnight, and the founder of the legendary a cappella group Take Six, which takes a mix of gospel, jazz, and R&B in six-part harmony. They have had an illustrious career, over 8 Grammy wins, super amazing arrangers, musicians. I saw them years ago with Nina Freelon in the early 2000s in Boston, and they were amazing, and they still are today. I'm so excited to talk to them. Please help me welcome, ladies and gentlemen, Claude McKnight. Hello, Claude.
Hello.
Hello, how are you?
I'm good.
Super excited to talk to you. We've been long time fans of Take Six and your work, and so just an honor and privilege of having you on today.
Well, thank you very much.
So we're super excited. Let's get started. I wanted to chat with you, Claude, about your latest single. I saw on Spotify you had a remix with Kid Capri of your hit Spread Love. And I wanted to talk about that and talk about the Spread Love 2020 Challenge.
Okay.
So if you could just tell us a little bit about that project and why you chose to remake that song, and then on social media, what the challenge is all about.
Okay. So most people know, but for those who don't know, the very first single Take Six ever did was Spread Love, and that's back in 1988. Mm-hmm. And interestingly enough, at one point, Kid Capri actually did a remix right around that time on the song. We've been friends with him ever since. So fast forward to 2020, with all of the unrest and the pandemic and so many things that have been going on, we decided as a group, you know what, with everything else being spread out there, let's spread love. So we decided to relaunch the song and to do a remix of our own on it, and, you know, to issue a Spread Love 2020 challenge to anyone who wanted to take our vocal stems, meaning, you know, the vocals that we had re-recorded, and reimagine the song in whatever way they wanted to. And that would kind of be everybody who wanted to participate being in a Spread Love kind of mood. And we got a number of really great submissions from around the world. And then Kid Capri did a brand new one. So it's just come full circle. And it's been something that has really, I think, not just launched the song again, but has really helped people get out there and understand that love is the biggest and best thing we need.
Definitely, especially what we're going through right now. I think we realize that we're going to be hopefully one day able to hug each other again and love on each other again physically and in person instead of from a distance. So I think that's a great message. You know, you can spread not just illness and bad news, but you can also spread good news and health and hope. And so I think that's definitely part of that challenge. Now, I saw before that the last album that I listened to you, which I love, is a live album that you guys did with the legendary Manhattan Transfer, who I know is, you know, one of the top a cappella groups as well in the world. And so how was it teaming up with them? And I know you had worked on some stuff with them and had rubbed shoulders with them for a very long time. But how was it kind of working on that project together?
It was great. I mean, that project was basically, yeah, as you mentioned, a live thing that we had done, pretty much the same set of songs and performances from what we've been on tour with them doing. So in the last 3 or 4 years, we've toured with them quite a bit and decided that it would make sense to go ahead and record that for posterity. And so, I mean, we've known them our entire career and they've known us. And it's been pretty much a love affair, if you really want to call it that. You know, it's, we love what they do. They love what we do. And so being on tour and then recording this project has been something that's been very, very cool for all of us because we love those songs. And so, you know, you put your heart and your soul into it and all your musicality and just have fun.
And then when you have so many great musicians like all in one place, how does that push an iron sharpen iron to have people create their best work?
Well, it's exactly what you just said. You know, I think that when you feel like you're at the top of your game and, you know, everybody else feels that way, you're constantly striving to push each other and to get the best out of each other. I think that that is something that is an amazing quality, because then when you hear the project later on, you know that everybody lifted everybody else up. And so I think that that's what we should all strive to do. But certainly on that project, that's what we were doing.
Excellent. Excellent. And you can definitely hear it on the recording, and you can hear it from the audience response too, as well. And so I want to talk a little bit about your accolades. You know, Take Six, the group it's an 8-time Grammy winner. You guys have also won Dove Awards, which is the gospel equivalent of Grammy, and then Soul Train Award, and nominated for NAACP Image Awards. So what would you say, Claude, is the secret to your musical success?
Well, you know, I think it's two or threefold. I think first and foremost, and without sounding cliche, I think that God really put us together. You know, I think that from the very beginning, it's something that we couldn't get out of the way of ourselves. We knew that we loved this kind of music, but it was the message that really drew us. And that's what has kept us together all these years. And I think another part of that is that we actually really like each other. And that might sound like it's not that big a deal or whatever, or that every group likes, you know, each other. And that's not the case. You know, there are a lot of groups that once you really start either getting some kind of success or failures, you find out who you are. You know, each person finds out who they are. Then they bring that element into the group. And it can be very challenging if you don't really iron out the things that got you in the group in the first place. And for us, it's always been a respect factor underneath everything. And I think that just like family, if you respect each other, you can get past all of the personality quirks and the things, you know, the highs, the lows, the ups, the downs, and all of that. And I think that's how we've been together for 30 plus years, because there's that respect and that like for each other. And as I said, the fact that we believe that it's a much higher calling for us.
No, yeah, I can definitely relate to that. You know, over the weekend, I've been talking about there's a new Michael Jordan documentary that's out. And when I explain to people about Michael Jordan, I say, you know, as great as an athlete he is, and everyone will remember him for what he's done in the world of basketball, it's still a team sport. You know, you still can be shining with everyone, but you still have to work together as a team. It's the same way with a group like Take Six. All of you individually are amazing musicians, amazing vocalists, amazing singers, have great ears, able to blend and different things like that. And so I think you're right. I think it's having that fit of, you know, no egos and a mutual respect that would allow you to be able to keep, you know, personnel to keep going for 30 plus years, which is no small feat. I mean, a lot of groups for different reasons, you know, break up, and to be able to keep that together, it really shows that you're really a family. So I wanted to kind of talk about the origins, as you were saying, of how you guys actually formed. Now, I know you started with a predecessor group that was called Alliance while you were in college. But in your own words, like, how did you find the magical six parts to kind of create what is now Take Six?
Well, let me go back even before that. So I started what would be considered, I guess, the kernel of the idea of the group when I was a freshman in college. It was four of us. And we were actually called the Gentlemen's Estates Quartet, because that was the name of the freshman housing. And, you know, at that time, we were pretty much doing what would be considered maybe even, you know, doo-wop or barbershop style harmonies. And Mark Kibble, who's in the group now, came into a restroom where we were rehearsing one day and actually added a fifth part to what we were doing, and subsequently started doing the arrangements for the group. And, you know, we would go through different iterations, you know, here and there, lose a guy here and there. But as different guys started coming in, according to the kinds of arrangements that Mark was doing, it started being a bunch of guys who really enjoyed jazz chords and extended chords and stuff. So I think that's how the group really came together, was you started you found guys who were gravitating towards this kind of music. So then we added a sixth member, because that played right into the strengths of what Mark was really great at as far as the arranging. And that sixth member was Mervyn Warren, who was also, or is also, an amazing arranger of jazz leaning chords and stuff. So I think it's one of those things where, you know, you gravitate towards what it is you really like. So that we didn't have to put out you know, a siren call for anybody to be like, hey, who wants to sing in this group? I think it just attracted people who really like this kind of thing. And over the years, you know, we got the right guys for this group and then, you know, got our record deal and the rest is kind of history.
Yeah. So then to piggyback on that, I really am interested to hear from your vantage point and perspective, what are the musical influences that make up your music and Take Six? I mean, you guys are in acapella, which is a genre of its own, but then also you do have that huge jazz underpinning, but also a very big gospel and R&B underpinning as well. So what do you guys consider, or when you were forming the group or even now, like your influences or how you were able to think about the music that you work on?
Well, interestingly enough, I mean, you just mentioned all of that. So think of it this way. We were all born and raised in Christian homes, so we have that underpinning. We went to a Christian college, Oakwood University in Huntsville, Alabama. But we all also grew up listening to, you know, at the time, probably very contemporary gospel and certainly jazz stuff. And we're all huge Earth, Wind & Fire fans and, you know, everything from Prince to, you know, Michael Jackson to, you know, so we had all of that kind of stuff as, you know, influences from R&B. And then, you know, we all listened to the Manhattan Transfer and the Singers Unlimited and the Hi-Los and the Mills Brothers and groups like that who had, you know, huge a cappella underpinnings to them. So I think once we got a group of guys who had all of those influences amongst us, it fed into what it is we became. You know, you are what you eat. So all of those things came out in our arrangements and in our choosing of songs and even in our writing styles.
Yeah, we can definitely understand how that would make sense. And so I also just wanted to briefly also mention that, you know, growing up, you obviously come from a very musical family. We know your brother, Brian, is, you know, hugely successful in R&B and you worked together in your early days as well. But I just kind of wanted to understand the, you know, how that was growing up together and were other people in your family musical? And, you know, were you singing in church young? How did you kind of come into music from the very, very beginning in your origins?
Well, everybody on my mom's side of the family is very musical. You know, her dad, my grandfather, was the director of the choir in Buffalo, New York. So pretty much all of us who lived in that area matriculated through that choir at some point or another. And our family reunions were always about music, you know. So, you know, in my mom's generation, there's seven kids, five girls, two boys, and, you know, a bunch of kids from them. So, you know, I'm in that generation. So all my cousins, my aunts, my uncles, my grandparents, very musical. So it was always something for us that just seemed natural. You know, Brian and I don't even consider ourselves to be the best singers in our family. You know, a cousin named Chris Willis, who's an amazing singer, and his sisters and brothers are amazing singers. I have two other brothers, Michael and Fred, who the four boys in my family grew up singing in a quartet in church, you know, and then my uncles and aunts all sang together. So it's something that we thought everybody did until we got to school and realized that, oh, wait a minute, everybody doesn't do this. So it was just a natural thing for us. And you know, going back to my grandfather, that choir in Buffalo, New York, once upon a time, used to do certain gigs around town with the Duke Ellington Orchestra. So music was always a really, really important thing in our entire family.
Wow, that's amazing. And so when you think about those times, like if your family listened to music, like what, you know, would you say was in your formative years kind of the soundtrack?
Wow. Okay. So in my immediate family, I have to credit my parents with having a very eclectic album collection. So we listened to everything from James Cleveland on the traditional gospel front to the Hawkins family, which were very, very contemporary at the time, and Andre Crouch. And then we would listen to everything from Duke Ellington Orchestra stuff to Quincy Jones to Herbie Hancock to even some very not well-known artists who were more from our church, for like Walter Artis and his chorale, and Shelton Kilby and the Breath of Life Quartet, and then of course the Manhattan Transfer and stuff like that. So we listened to a lot of stuff. I mean, the OJs, and, I mean, it was so many different kinds of things that I listened to growing up from the time I was probably 3, 4, 5 years old.
Wow. And you've had, you know, the honor and privilege of working with so many great artists as well. I've seen that the band has worked with Ray Charles, Nina Freelon. I actually saw you guys in Boston with Nina Freelon back in the early 2000s. Gordon Goodwin, Don Healy, Whitney Houston, Al Jarreau, Quincy Jones, who you named, Katie Lang, Queen Latifah, Manhattan Transfer, who you did the album with and toured with for a long time, your brother Brian, Luis Miguel, Marcus Miller, Joe Sample, Ben Tankard, CeCe Winans, Stevie Wonder. Love your, you know, Christmas stuff and other stuff that you guys done with Stevie. And then most recently with Jacob Collier, Quincy Jones' protege, who's amazing and has a lot of influences from you that we can hear in his a cappella arrangements. Do you have any kind of favorite stories from any collaborations you'd like to share or memorable moments?
Wow. I mean, yeah, we could go on for 3 weeks talking about that. I'll just share a couple of things. You know, working with Quincy a few times has been amazing. You know, first time we worked with him was over 30 years ago. And the thing that all of us in the group remember is just how amazing it was, in the sense that Quincy would get things out of you that you didn't even realize you had. And that's a testament to someone who is such a great producer that, and psychologist, if you think about it, because when you're working with different people, everybody has a different way they work. Every artist, every singer, every producer. And I think to get the best out of you, there has to be a connection that works. And Quincy's that kind of producer. And so that was an amazing time working with him each time we worked with him, because you hear it later on, you're like, wow, we did that, you know? And coming all the way to just a year ago or so, someone you didn't mention who we've worked with was kind of the same way, was Dr. Dre. You know, we worked with him for a few days in the studio, and he's so meticulous and so musical and knows exactly what he wants, that was very cool, because, you know, you would think that we are very, very different in what it is we're doing, especially the musical genres. But when you get right down to it, it's really about having a plan and having focus and then getting out of people what it is you know they can do, or even more than what you know they can do. And so that was an amazing time working with him. You know, I'll share also, you know, working with Stevie. You know, we've done some things on record and then some things in person, and he's always the same guy. He's our big brother and just somebody we love being around, and he's always genuine. So that's just a couple of stories from a few people we've worked with.
I'm definitely sure you have more. I mean, that's such a laundry list of a who's who of music. So is there anyone that you haven't worked with that you would still like to work with if things align?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, there are very few of the old school people still around, but Tony Bennett has always been someone that we would love to work with. You know, that voice is so amazing, and he's still amazing in his 90s. So if someone like that, and then, you know, on the younger front, someone like a Bruno Mars or Tori Kelly, you know, people like that. Because working with Jacob, who is also quite young, you know, you find out things from this whole new generation of musicians to where they've listened to what it is we've done, and then they take it in a whole different direction. And that's very cool, because, you know, you build upon what it is that you've been influenced by. So yeah, some of those people would be amazing to work with.
Oh yeah, when you look at someone like Jacob, I saw him at the Troubadour when he was first coming out with his first album. He had MIT create a pedal for him to be able to do all these voicings live. But, you know, you can definitely hear in his arrangements, especially his Stevie cover of You and I was like, this sounds like Take Six. I thought it was in the beginning, and then I found out who he actually was. And, you know, lots of respect for him. Already he's a 4-time Grammy winner himself, so he definitely knows what he's doing. But we have two rapid-fire questions as we start to kind of wrap up, Claude. And again, thank you so much for coming on today. We asked this to all of our guests because our listening audience, a lot of them are active musicians or people that want to be in that as a career. And so what advice would you give a newbie starting out now in music?
Well, that's easy. I would tell them, first of all, make sure that you are authentically you. And what I mean by that is find out what it is that you're really good at and really authentic at, and then continue to hone that part of your soul and your musicality, because everybody is different. And I think what ends up happening a lot of times is we grow up listening to certain artists, especially if we're singers, and we emulate them and you know, we sound like them or whatever, and we don't really know who we are. And it doesn't mean that you can't have elements of who that artist is, but really find out who you are so that if someone ever hears you, they know immediately, ah, that's so-and-so, instead of saying, oh, they sound like this person or that person. Be you. And then the other thing I would say is continue to learn. And by learning, I mean whether or not that's in schooling or lessons or whatever, or just listening, because that is so important. You know, I'm 30 plus years into this and I'm still listening to all of the stuff I grew up listening to and new stuff, because you won't ever know it all. And I think by listening again, you are what you eat. You can use elements of what it is you're hearing or have learned, and then that can become part of who you are and keep building on your platform.
Definitely, that's good advice. And I think that really never changes. I think you do have to continue to keep listening, keep learning, keep figuring out your sound versus the emulation, which you spoke of. And then what do you want your musical legacy to be? And I know that you already had an illustrious career of 30 years. I think like a Tony Bennett, you guys can go the distance as long as you want to and are able to. So, but it may be too early to tell. But when it's all said and done, what do you want your musical legacy to be or be remembered for the most?
You know, that's a really great question. I think the most, or one of the most important things for me is I think as people continue to listen, I would hope that they would always be able to say that Take Six always was that group that would strive for excellence in everything they did. You know, so whether or not you like every song that we've done or every project that we've done or every genre we've tried, I would always want people to say, man, they really brought it. They were always 100% stretching and being honest with themselves and giving an effort that never seemed like they mailed it in. I think that's what's most important, because I think then the listener and the creator can feel like, you know what, they didn't cheat.
I hear you on that. That's a really great answer. And I think, you know, we'll talk to you hopefully 30 years from now. We'll hear a totally different answer as you continue to progress. I do have a bonus question, though. Since Take Six has made so many amazing records and been so influential within the space, what do you say is like your top couple of tunes? Now, I know your earlier stuff, you guys definitely progressed into other things, not just acapella, but with music and other things. So like what stands out to you the most? It's like if a person hadn't listened to Take Six yet and they go listen to you, like what's the go-tos to check out first?
Wow. So not, I mean, you're talking about 30 plus years of stuff, not just our own stuff, but you know, everybody you've named that we've worked with. So, you know, kind of as an introduction to Take Six, I would say certainly listen to our first album, because that's when we were kids pretty much. And, you know, we were young in this industry. And I think we sound young on those recordings. And what I mean by that is, you know, we weren't so professional that we knew everything we were doing at the time. I think there's an innocence to that first recording, even though, you know, listening back to it now from a technological standpoint, you know, each one of us in the group is kind of like, ooh, you know, this could have been done differently and all of that. But I think there's that innocence that I think a lot of artists have in their first work that they never actually recapture. So that's one full project I would say to check out. I also would say, you know, the group, the song Say Tombro from Quincy Jones's Back on the Block album, I think is something that is truly a Take Six gem. You know, I think the arrangement and the song itself, it was written by Yvonne Lins, who's an amazing Brazilian songwriter, would be a great thing to hear. And a project that not a lot of people know that we've done, because it was a self, not only self-produced, but we put it on our own label about 10 or more years ago, an album called Feels Good. And it was one of the albums that was the most fun for us because we were free. We had been with a major label up until that point. And it's not like they told us what to do, whatever, but there's a certain expectation that was there. And, you know, so all of that was off of us when we did that album. And so those songs are from a fresher perspective. And then our most recent work, which is called Iconic, and there's songs on that album that we decided to poll each other in the group, you know, what are your favorite songs? And all the songs that got 5 or 6 votes were the ones that we put on that album. So we have everything on there from Sailing from Christopher Cross to Don't Know Why from Norah Jones to Change the World from Eric Clapton. And so it's a really, really cool album. And I would encourage anyone who wants a Take Six lesson, especially something more recent, to check out Iconic.
Oh, yes. I remember that when it came out and hearing some of it on our local KJAZ California station and some other stations around Southern California. That's amazing. That's just, I think all of those are great. I would say definitely check out their greatest hits or a playlist on Spotify. There's no bad track when it comes to Take Six. I'll just leave it at that. So Claude, thank you so much for coming on to Deeper Grooves Podcast today. We've had a pleasure speaking with you, and thank you so much for taking the time. We'll circle back to your team when all of it is out so that we can send you the links and update you and hopefully be able to hear new music from your group in the coming years as well.
I appreciate it a lot. Thank you.
You're welcome. Take care and enjoy the rest of your day. We'll talk soon.
All right. Bye-bye.
And take care. Bye-bye. I wish we had more time with Claude McKnight today. We would have had so many more great stories like the ones he told us about Quincy Jones and Stevie Wonder and Dr. Dre. So you should definitely go out and check out Take Six's music, streaming on all streaming platforms now. Start with their greatest hits and work your way down. I would like to thank our engineer Tim Hall and 1192 Studios for mixing and mastering this recording today. You've been listening once again to Deeper Grooves, Musicians on Music, hosted by Cliff Beach and sponsored by California Soul Music Record Label. If you like this and you want to hear more, you can check us out online at www.californiasoulmusic.com/deepergrooves, or you can also check us out at anchor.fm/deepergrooves. Until then, keep it rocking. Stay happy, stay healthy, stay safe. We'll talk to you soon. Da 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 da